in a closet, or waiting in the basement. It's not sharp or toxic or flammable, yet it helps send more people to the trauma center than any other household item.
Hey, hon, do me a favor and hold the ladder for me.
I have a better idea. Let's just call somebody to clean the gutters.
To scoop out a few leaves? I'll be down in a heartbeat. Whoa! Ow!
No!
Using a ladder might seem easy. Misusing one is even easier. Ask any of the 150,000 people who fell off their ladders into the trauma center last year alone. Don't let a do-it-yourself project do yourself in. For tips on ladder safety, visit orthoinfo.org, a public service message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, who want to keep your bones safe, strong, and well-connected.
WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary back with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. Emergency, radio emergency calls only, please. 855-915-9636. As it is still just me talking, pushing buttons, answering the phone, trying to make all of the magic happen by my lonesome here on this Wednesday night. Happy November to everyone out there. Get ready. It's going to get cold. It's going to get snowy. We'll talk about that a little bit later tonight. But first, I must begin with an apology, because I promised you a couple of weeks ago that I would be here on the night before Halloween. Halloween-een, as some of you may know it, to play 4 hours of great Halloween-themed music and get you in the Halloween spirit. That was before I went to the Patriots versus Cleveland Browns game and slipped and fell on the train tracks. Now, I'm a season ticket holder for the Patriots, as you may know, and where we park is a place called the Foxborough Terminals. And it is adjacent to Gillette Stadium. So to get from where we park to the stadium, we have to walk down the train tracks, around the train, avoid the train if it's coming in. And then we're in the main parking lot, and you walk across the main parking lot and into the stadium. Coming back, it's the exact opposite. You walk out through the main parking lot, across the train tracks, up the train tracks, and back to your vehicle. I've made this walk at least 100 times and never had any incident. I am not somebody who falls. I am not somebody who trips. I have excellent balance as a general rule. Well, walking back a week ago Sunday, I fell. Not only did I fell, but I fell about as poorly as one can fall and landed on a railroad tie on my kneecaps. The net result of that is that my knees both were very badly bruised, still are, actually, and I couldn't really walk all that well. I'm still having trouble walking now, but I am able to navigate stairs once again, one at a time, like a normal person, which is a plus. Every day it gets a little bit better, but practically speaking, last Wednesday night, there was no possible way for me to even get into my car and drive over here. So I'm disappointed. I'm kind of heartbroken, actually, because I was really looking forward to doing that show. And instead, I wound up spending most of last week sitting on the couch with frozen chicken, Trader Joe's, I believe, Oriental chicken, icing down my kneecap. So that's my tale of woe, and I will heal. I will be fine. But again, you know, it's a one-shot deal. I can't come in tonight and play a bunch of Halloween music because at this point, we just don't care. So time to move on to the news and all of the things that are happening. The moratorium on election coverage has been lifted as we are now a couple of months away from both the Iowa caucus and the New Hampshire primary. This is when it starts to get real. I don't have any election coverage on tap for tonight, but we will be getting into that in the weeks ahead as events warrant. Right now, we're just sort of in a in-the-middle holding pattern where nothing really exciting is happening, unless we want to talk about what is happening with members of Congress. It says a local angle. This comes to us from Politico, politico.com. Ethics Committee reviews campaign funding allegation against Representative Lori Trahan. Lori Trahan is a freshman representative from the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. The House Ethics Committee is reviewing whether to open a full-scale investigation into allegations that Democratic freshman Representative Lori Trahan, Massachusetts, failed to properly disclose the source of $300,000 in personal funds she loaned to her congressional campaign in 2018. Trahan is the second Democratic freshman caught up in ethics issues in recent weeks, although this case is far less serious than the allegations that brought down former Rep. Katie Hill, who resigned last week. Katie Hill, you may recall, had nude pictures of herself frolicking with a campaign staffer posted online, among other things. There were widespread allegations of impropriety with Katie Hill. This is one specific allegation. The Office of Congressional Ethics, the independent ethics watchdog, referred the Trahan case to the ethics panel on September 18th, according to a statement released on Monday. The Ethics Committee is taking another 45 days to evaluate the matter before deciding whether to go forward with a full investigation or dismiss the case. The panel was required to disclose the OCE referral publicly. The 46-year-old Trahan, a businesswoman and former congressional aide, won a heavily contested Democratic primary in 2018, winning by just 145 votes over Dan Coe, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh's former chief of staff. Trahan then romped to victory in the general election by a big margin. I don't know romp is the right word. I don't know that one romps to victory in an election. maybe save the spice on that one, Politico. But conservative outside groups filed complaints against Trahan, alleging that she failed to properly disclose her personal financial assets until after the November election. Trahan later acknowledged mistakes with her initial disclosure filings and campaign finance reports and filed amended versions of those documents. But Coe, who is considering challenging Trahan again, has demanded she make clear the source of the disputed funds. Trahan has repeatedly denied any wrongdoing. She released an lengthy document. Maybe if you weren't writing romping about people romped to victory, you'd get your articles correct. A lengthy document on Medium last week outlining how her husband Dave, a home builder, had moved funds into a joint checking account held by the couple, money that was then loaned to Trahan's congressional campaign. This is from Lori Trahan. Quote, "So over the course of the campaign, we decided to move $300,000 from income Dave had earned to our joint checking account. Dave deposited $50,000 and $55,000 into our joint checking account before I filed my first and second quarterly reports in 2018. And in August, he deposited an additional $200,000, Trahan wrote. Quote, "I now know that the way I contributed those funds constitute a gray area in campaign finance law. I also know that the Federal Election Commission's past rulings suggest what I did was not a violation." In a statement Monday, Trahan spokesman Mark McDevitt said the Massachusetts Democrat properly followed campaign finance regulations during the campaign. Quote, and here we go with the spin. "This review involves the same issues raised by a right-wing group formerly headed by Donald Trump's acting attorney general with a long history of attacking Democrats," McDevitt said. "A candidate may make unlimited contributions to her campaign from her personal funds." Yes, this is true. In cases involving Jane Fonda and Bob Dole, the FEC has treated spouses' funds as the candidates' personal funds when the candidates had the right to manage and dispose of those same funds under state law. Okay, yes, all of this is true. However, here's the problem, okay? We're not talking about Jane Fonda, who is a well-paid Hollywood actress, and her husband, Ted Turner, okay? Ted Turner I don't know if Ted Turner ever made billionaire or not. Ted Turner was a multi-millionaire who owned CNN, among other things, okay? Bob Dole, career politician, piles of money, okay? Tons and tons of campaign funds, tons of revenue, books, personal appearances, all kinds of stuff, okay? This is allegedly, you know, just an average suburbanite whose husband, who is a home builder, just happens to have $300,000 lying around that finds its way into the joint checking account. That is a lot of money. That is a lot of money. $300,000 is life-changing money for most people. And she describes this as income Dave had earned. Now, I grew up in that industry, and I will tell you that it is possible to make that kind of money. Depends on what you're doing and what you're building and how much it's selling for, on and on and on and on and on. Okay? You can make a lot of money building houses. Home builders, because they have to buy property, because they have to, you know, if you're building houses from scratch, you may have a lot of money sitting around waiting for your next project. $300,000, even by those standards, is a lot. That's a lot of money to just mysteriously appear in a checking account. And it raises the question of where that money came from. Because if a lot of people gave money to Dave Trahan on behalf of Lori Trahan, and he deposited that into the joint checking account, that is a clear violation of campaign finance law. I will tell you on the flip side of it, I have worked on political campaigns. I have been a political consultant. I can tell you that the financial disclosure laws are some of the most labyrinthine, insane documents you will ever come across in your life. But we're not talking about a small amount of money here. We're talking about $300,000. And the optics of this raise questions. How does a builder and his wife, who is running for Congress, suddenly fall into $300,000? Where does $300 suddenly come from? This is a good topic for an ethics investigation. Because what you don't want to find out is that some wealthy individual handed 50 grand or 25, or a few wealthy individuals handed 25 grand to the husband, who then said, oh, this is income, and put it in the joint checking account so that she could use it for the campaign. That would be a clear violation of campaign finance laws because there are limits on the amount of money that you can accept from any single individual. So what they're saying in this case is this does not pass the sniff test at first look. Now, they may dig into it and they may find out that her husband had large amounts of money sitting around that he would use for developing his projects. And he chose to put that money into their joint checking account so that she could use it for her campaign. Could be 100% completely above the board, completely legit. Could be that this money just suddenly shows up. And it's like, hey, where did that money come from? Should be relatively easy for them to document the trail of this money and determine whether or not any violation occurred. And as I said, it's only going to be a violation if we find out that third parties gave money to her husband, which he then put in his bank account and said, oh, this is my money, and then slid it over into the joint account, essentially laundering it so that she could use it for her campaign. That is the issue at stake here. Now, I'm not going to accuse Lori Trahan of anything. That's what the investigation is for. I will say that $300,000 showing up out of nowhere for even rich people is unusual. That's a lot of money. That's more money than a lot of people have in their retirement savings. Okay? If you were a home builder, if you're one of these guys who's, you know, building these multi-million dollar mansions or these million dollar mansions on spec, you go out, you get the land, you build the house, you sell it. It is not unreasonable for those developers to have that kind of money parked waiting for their next project, because there's a huge upfront investment when you're doing that sort of thing. That may be the case here. I don't know. All I'm saying is it raises eyebrows. And because it raises eyebrows, the ethics committee is involved. But there's another piece of this. There is another piece of this, because this is political. And her spokesman, Mark McDevitt, although he's throwing out nonsense talking points, you know, this review involves the same issues raised by a right-wing group. Shut up. Shut up. As soon as those words leave your mouth, shut up. You're not worth listening to. Okay? Don't try and partisan this up. Don't make that. He's right to do it, but he's doing it the wrong way. Because there is a bit of a hunt going on in Congress right now. And there is a hunt going on in Congress right now that is aimed primarily at freshman Democrat representatives. Because of the other thing that is going on in Congress right now, which is the impeachment. The Republicans are digging hard to find whatever they can about any vulnerable Democrats in the House of Representatives. Because this is part of their strategy to counter the impeachment. If they can dislodge enough of these Democrats, particularly if they can dislodge some powerful Democrats, it does two things. Number one, it reduces the number of votes that they potentially, the Democrats, have for impeachment. And number two, it may convince some Democrats that it's not worth it to pursue this. So already, just a week ago, we had the California Democratic freshman Katie Hill thrown out. She resigned over images that never should have been posted online, over behavior that never should have been made public, and over the possibility that she was carrying on a sexual relationship with a member of her congressional staff, which is an ethics violation. Everything that came out, they ruined Katie Hill. This is because of the impeachment. There have been numerous stories leaked about Ilhan Omar, who is apparently carrying on an affair with her campaign manager or a campaign consultant, someone who was on her payroll, to the point where we now have paparazzi staking out her house down near our nation's capital, taking pictures of her and her paramour coming and going. By the way, both she and her alleged lover are married. And the story now is that they're both going to get divorced and they're going to take up together. You know, it's your life. You know, you can do whatever you want to do. But when you put information like that out there, there are a lot of voters who will look at that candidate and they'll say, I'm not going to vote for you. All right. You broke up your marriage. You left your husband for some guy. That's not cool. I don't support people who do that. There will be more of this, and it will be directed at Democrats. Every opposition researcher, every private investigator, and anybody they can get their hands on right now is digging into the personal lives and the private lives of the Democratic representatives in Washington, D.C., because they want to dislodge them. They want to come up with scandals that will drive these people out of office, because it is to the benefit of the Republican Party for them to do this. Now, there was a version of the story that I read, which adds another dimension to this, that had a comment from Dan Coe. And it's, I don't know if this has been edited or I was looking at a different one. But the fact that you got Marty Walsh lined up against Lori Trahan is not good for Lori Trahan. Marty Walsh remains the mayor of Boston, and Marty Walsh remains the you know, the sort of de facto head of the Democrat Party, at least within Route 128. Maybe not statewide, but Marty Walsh carries a lot of weight in this state right now. And if he's lining up against you and his people are lining up against you and ethics investigators are lining up against you, it's probably not going to end well for you. So something to keep in mind. It is WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. The governor's vaping ban still persists. It is still going on. The state has reported a third suspected death from vaping-related illness. Again, I must say reported because everyone else in the media insists on getting this wrong. Third person dies from vaping-related illness. No. Third person has been reported. The state doesn't make that determination. The CDC makes that determination. Lazy local journalists can't bother to get it right. I can't help that. All I can do is set you straight and say these are the facts, okay? A third potential vaping-related death has been reported to the CDC. And by the way, the CDC, we never seem to get the feedback on that, you know? Because if we have three actual vaping illness deaths in this state, that would put us in the upper echelon of states that are having this problem. That starts getting into Midwest numbers in terms of deaths nationwide. But there have been two new fronts opened in the attempt to overturn the governor's vaping ban. And one of them took place today. If you were out and about trying to buy a pack of cigarettes, maybe a pack of cigarettes, and you tried to go to a convenience store, you may have found it closed. Convenience stores, several hundred of them around the state, closed their doors today so that they could go to Beacon Hill and protest against the vaping ban and something new that has snuck into this. Because flush with their success in banning vaping products, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is now looking at banning menthol cigarettes. From CBS Boston. A proposed ban on menthol cigarettes in Massachusetts has some convenience store owners worried about their livelihood. Quote, the ban on menthol cigarettes sends a message to all blacks and minorities in Boston that they aren't smart enough to choose, but white people are. Thanks, but no thanks, said Cornel Allen of the Boston Convenience Store Owners Association. Yep, this is going to get racially tinged, folks, very, very quickly. Humaya and Morshid's Dorchester convenience store is one of hundreds across the state closing for the day Wednesday, so owners can protest at a rally at the statehouse. Quote, we're going to lose a lot of employment, Morshid said of the proposed ban. This is 50% of our revenue, and definitely our store would have to be closed. Now, there's an interesting number right there, because that's one of the first questions that you're going to ask. And keep in mind, we're beyond the vaping ban now, okay? The Baker administration, by its own admission, has said that the four-month vaping ban would cost $8 million in revenue, lost revenue to business. So that's $2 million a month that will just be lost because of this vaping ban. I don't know how a Republican governor goes ahead and tells small business, sorry, we're taking $8 million away from you. Because we don't like your product, which, by the way, is legal, right? Because vapes are still legal. Now it has moved on. Now we have graduated to, hey, let's ban menthol cigarettes. Because this is Massachusetts. This is the state where everything is illegal, right? Tattoos were illegal forever, right? Fireworks, one of two states in the United States where fireworks are completely illegal. Now they want to go after the menthols because they want to ban all flavored cigarettes. And traditionally, when you talk, and we've banned flavored cigarettes in the past. This is one of those things that crops up every few years. You know, companies put out all these flavored cigarettes. Teenagers start smoking them. Everybody loses their mind. And then the state comes along and says, you can't sell those anymore. Menthol has always been separate from that. Because almost as long as there have been cigarettes, there have been menthol cigarettes. Some people like menthol cigarettes. Full disclosure, I smoked Newports for a long time. I smoked Newports for, I think, a decade. And they're bad for you. All cigarettes are bad for you. Menthol just does a number on your lungs. It really does. So I don't smoke menthol anymore. But I have smoked menthol. I used to enjoy smoking menthol. I switched back to lights. They can't call them lights anymore because they're really not. All cigarettes are bad. I switched back to lights, and I walked into a convenience store a couple of years after I'd stopped smoking menthols. And I bought, and I didn't have my brand, so I'm like, you know what? Give me a pack of Newports. And I lit up a Newport, I took one puff, and my lungs recoiled in horror. They were like, no, we thought this was done. We thought this was over. What are you doing? Stop with the menthol. I didn't even finish the pack. I went to another convenience store, bought my brand, and just gave away the rest of that pack of Newports because I couldn't handle them anymore. Menthols are tough on your lungs. Anyway, the ban would include all flavored cigarettes, including menthol and e-cigarette products. That would leave some store shelves bare and some smokers upset, like Bobby Cresta. Quote, it's infringing on rights that have been in place for quite a while. You are correct, Bobby Cresta. No one has ever talked about banning cigarettes in my 50 years on this planet. And in my 50 years on this planet, menthol cigarettes have sat right next to regular cigarettes. They've just been there. It's an FDA-approved product. But, hey, oh, we're banning the vapes. Maybe we can ban more stuff. In a statement sent to WBZ-TV, Monica Lupi, the executive director of the Boston Public Health Commission, said, quote, the marketing and retail practices of tobacco companies to infiltrate our communities of color with menthol tobacco products are unacceptable. And the fact that similar tactics are being used now to target our kids with vaping products demands action. I'm going to read you this statement again. The marketing and retail practices of tobacco companies to infiltrate our communities of color with menthol tobacco products are unacceptable. And the fact that similar tactics are being used now to target our kids with vaping products demands action. Why is the executive director of the Boston Public Health Commission a racist? Can someone answer me that question? Why is Monica Lupi a racist? She made a racist statement. To infiltrate our communities of color with menthol tobacco products. How can that statement be read as anything other than racist? As I said, I used to smoke menthol cigarettes. I knew a lot of people in college who smoked menthol cigarettes. Monica Lupi is suggesting that only black people, only brown people smoke menthol cigarettes. That is a racist statement, Monica Lupi, that you should be walking back and retracting as quickly as possible. And it reinforces what Cornel Allen of the Boston Convenience Store Owners Association said. And I will read you his quote again. The ban on menthol cigarettes sends a message to all blacks and minorities in Boston that they aren't smart enough to choose, but white people are. He is reacting directly to the racist statement made by Monica Lupi. And I'll give it to you again. The marketing and retail practices of tobacco companies to infiltrate our communities of color. Last time I checked, I could go buy menthol cigarettes at any convenience store that I walked into, okay? Whether I am in Newton or Lynn or Roxbury or upstate Maine, everybody sells menthol. So what are you saying, Monica Lupi? What are you saying? Are you saying that these companies that black people don't understand the dangers of smoking? Are you saying they don't understand the dangers of menthol? Are you saying that menthol was developed specifically to target black people? Do you not understand that that is a racist statement? That not only is that a racist statement, that no facts have been harmed in that statement. It is as far from factual as you can possibly get. All kinds of people smoke menthol cigarettes. According to the CDC, African Americans are more likely to die from smoking-related diseases than white smokers. According to the anti-smoking group Truth Initiative, nearly 9 in 10 African-American smokers use menthol cigarettes. Okay. But does that mean that this product has been specifically designed to hook African-Americans, or that African-Americans can't figure out for themselves that cigarettes are dangerous, so our government needs to ban them? This is what Monica Lupi and the Baker administration are saying. People can't control themselves. Therefore, Big Brother government needs to come in and run their lives for them. We're going to take that choice away from you because you're incapable of making it for yourself. That's what they're saying. And they're targeting it at the black community. These are Republicans doing this. Are we in crazy land? Is it crazy time again? Lawmakers are expected to vote on the proposal as early as November 20th. Oh, great for that. Great for that. Yes, let's enact some racist policies. Let's have a Republican government enact some racist, freedom-killing policies in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, because that's a good idea. I'm sorry. You are infantilizing the black community, Monica Lupi and Baker administration. These are racist policies. And if we want to talk about the reason why African Americans are more likely to die from smoking, let's take a look at poverty. Because there is a very strong correlation between poverty and smoking. Because it's one of the few things that you can afford to do. Yeah, they've done everything that they can to tax cigarettes out of the hands of the poor. You know, but it's a little bit like cable television. Cable television realized in the 1980s they could run the rates as high as they possibly wanted, and people would still pay for it. They go without food, they go without heat, they go without paying all their other bills, but they'd keep the cable on, and they'll keep smoking, and they'll keep drinking. Those are the three things that are, you know, sort of economic reality proof. There is no factual basis for what the government is talking about. This is extraordinary what this state is trying to do. And it needs to be put to a stop. The vaping ban was unconstitutional enough. And we've already had a judge say this ban is unconstitutional. And that is being challenged on a new front now as well. On the cannabis side of things, from CBS Boston, judge orders end to ban on medical marijuana vaping sales unless Cannabis Commission acts. There's a new challenge to Governor Charlie Baker's ban on vaping sales in Massachusetts. A judge ruled Tuesday, and I think that was yesterday, that the portion of the ban that prohibits the sale of medical marijuana vapes must be lifted next week unless the Cannabis Commission votes to approve it. Superior Court Judge Douglas Wilkins determined that the vaping ban caused irreparable harm to medical marijuana patients who vape THC oil. He ordered an end to the ban on November 12th unless the commission takes action. Now, this is a judge saying, hang on a second, Baker administration, you don't even have the power to enact that. We have a cannabis commission here in Massachusetts that decides what can and cannot be sold. And you cannot interfere with the cannabis commission. You cannot supersede the cannabis commission. And keep in mind, all of these proposed bans and the actual vaping ban were held with no public hearing, no input from anyone. No input from voters. No input from business holders. People are losing their jobs. People who rely on medical marijuana vapes are out of luck. You know, they're having to switch to regular marijuana and edibles, which in some cases they don't tolerate as well. For what? So that the governor can, I don't know, stop the kids from vaping? Is that what we're talking about here? We're going to stop the kids from vaping? Now we're going to stop the black community from smoking by banning menthol cigarettes? First of all, that's a racist policy. And that's a racist idea couched in racist language that infantilizes black people, which in and of itself is racist. Second of all, it's unconstitutional. You cannot ban an FDA-approved product just because you feel like it. Now, if we had some wacky progressive governor, you know, if we had Jill Stein up in the corner office proposing stuff like this, I'd be like, yeah, you get what you vote for. This is a Republican governor that's doing this. It breaks my brain. It breaks my brain. Because the Republicans are supposed to be the ones all about freedom and make your own choices and government get out of people's lives. Well, I guess we see why Governor Baker is so popular, you know, is because he is a Democrat in Republican clothing. This is nanny state. This is Big Brother. This kind of thing cannot be allowed to stand. And I understand that, you know, smokers are a popular target, okay? Everybody wants to get rid of the smokers. Everybody wants to get rid of cigarettes. If the federal government wants to ban cigarettes tomorrow, I have no problem with that. Go ahead. Do it. You'll be making a giant step forward for public health and contributing to climate change, but we'll get to that a little bit later tonight. Short of the federal government doing it, the states do not have a right to do it. Interstate Commerce Clause generally prohibits the states from banning things that are legal at the federal level. And nicotine is legal. Cigarettes are legal. Menthol cigarettes are legal at the federal level. You might be able to make an argument with vapes and vaping products because those are not FDA regulated. Okay, they've sort of snuck into the market and regulators have taken a wait and see approach with them. Okay, there is no FDA approved vaping product on the market right now. So there's a gray area there where the state can come in and say, you know what, we're going to ban this here. Same way they banned fireworks. Okay, the question of fireworks, the federal government said there's no federal law that says fireworks are legal. All right. States are free to do what they want. And it swung all the way to only a handful of states had them legal. And it swung back the other way where nearly every state has them legal, except for two. We happen to be one of them. But this is a massive, massive overreach. This is nanny state politics, which, by the way, are completely unnecessary if you would simply enforce the laws on the books. If the problem is that children are vaping, enforce the law. I believe the convenience store owners, when they say, the one owner who says, this is 50% of my business, cigarettes is half of my business. I believe that. Because what we've done in this state systematically by shutting down smoke shops, by banning cigarette sales in pharmacies and drugstores, by pressuring supermarkets to stop selling cigarettes, is we've essentially left only a handful of businesses that even still sell tobacco. Package stores, most of them, not all of them, but most of them, convenience stores, and gas stations. So if you live out in the suburbs, you're probably getting your smokes at a gas station. And if you live in the city, you're probably getting your smokes at a convenience store. As the number of businesses that sell a product gets smaller and smaller, that business becomes bigger and bigger for the retailers that can still sell it. So for convenience stores, the cigarettes are getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger because it's the only place you can get them. You go into downtown Boston, you know, there's some package stores around, but it's mostly convenience stores. There's no gas stations in downtown Boston. The gas stations are all outside of the city. So the convenience stores are the ones supplying cigarettes in their community. And they are dependent on that business. You ban menthol, which has been around for as long as cigarettes have been around. You ban menthol. Basically what you're doing is you are banning the cigarette of choice in select neighborhoods in the city of Boston. Are you going to tell me that's not a racist policy? Are you going to tell me there's any way to look at that as anything other than a racist policy? That a bunch of white politicians telling black people you can't smoke the cigarettes you like anymore? On what grounds? On what basis? There are so many problems with this. Least of all being that it's unconstitutional. But the real problem here is the overreach and the fact that the overreach is completely unnecessary. We have laws on the books that make it illegal to sell vapes or cigarettes to anyone under the age of 21. 18 in a few communities, increasingly 21 across the state. It is illegal to sell those products to kids. How are kids getting them? Are they ordering them online? Banned shipments of those products into Massachusetts. We have done that successfully with other things. Go after the stores that are selling this stuff to kids. Make it a crime. It is a crime, all right? Enforce it. Enforce the law. I can halfway defend the governor's ban on vaping products on public health grounds, okay? But it should have been shorter than it is. It should have been done with input from the industry, and it should have been done with warning so that people who sunk their life savings into opening a vaping business didn't suddenly see the government come along and shut them down for selling a legal product. This is wrong. And maybe you don't care about vaping. Maybe you don't care about smoking. Maybe you don't care about anything. Maybe your attitude is, you know what? It's going to make people healthier. I don't care if it's a racist policy. I don't care if it's unconstitutional. It's going to make people healthier. The end justifies the means. Well, that's all well and good today when it's something that you don't like. What do you think is going to be next? Are they coming for alcohol next? Are they coming for soft drinks next? Are they coming for candy bars next? Because if they get away with this, that's where this goes. You let them get away with banning one thing, they're going to ban something else. And they're going to ban something else. And they're going to ban something else. And sooner or later, banned in Boston becomes our lives again. And we're sitting here wondering why we don't enjoy the same freedoms as everybody else in the United States of America. I don't know if there's any public hearings scheduled for this. I doubt there are, because the state tends to not like the public weighing in from a common sense perspective or pointing out the fact that they are trying to pass racist policies. But if there is, it'll be at the State House. We know the convenience store owners were up there today. Might want to keep an eye out for that. Might want to talk to one of your representatives and let them know that you don't support a ban on menthol cigarettes, that you don't support a ban on anything that is legal in the other 49 states. Because it will create a lot of problems, not the least of which being the taxpayer money that we waste trying to defend the ban. But if you ban a legal product, what do you wind up with? A black market. Look at what's happened with vapes. Look at what's happened with fireworks. You go up to New Hampshire, load up your car, bring it down here, sell it, make money. That's what will happen. WMFO Medford. If it wasn't, again, if it wasn't a Republican governor doing this, I could probably put it in some perspective. And that, to me, is the thing that is the most shocking about this. And I think it may be time for Charlie Baker to hang up his Republican card and just admit that he is a nanny state liberal. In better news, Fall River's long nightmare is over. From MassLive.com, Fall River election results 2019, Paul Coogan to become city's next mayor, replacing controversial. That's not one of the words. Embattled is, controversial is the first word that you don't want. Embattled is where Haziel Correa should be. This headline should say, Fall River election results 2019, Paul Coogan to become city's next mayor, replacing embattled Haziel Correa. Because Haziel Correa is indeed embattled right now. Paul Coogan, a Fall River Public Schools representative, will replace the embattled Haziel Correa as the city's next mayor. With all precincts reporting, Coogan won the race with 10,653 votes, or 79% of the vote. Correa, the embattled. Okay, so they put it in the second paragraph. Correa, the embattled mayor who suspended his reelection bid, got 1,002 votes. 1,000 people voted for the guy who's been indicted twice and suspended his campaign. 7% of the vote, according to the unofficial results from the city. And that was with 79% of the vote in. So you can expect that percentage may have gone up by a couple of points. There were 1,756 write-in votes, comprising 13% of the vote. Somebody who jumped in at the very end. Correa survived the city council's attempt to remove him from office as a Bristol County Superior Court judge sided with him in court. Days later, however, he announced he was suspending his reelection campaign and taking a leave of absence. Despite his leave of absence, Correa continues to collect a paycheck from the city. Cliff Ponte, president of the Fall River City Council, was appointed acting mayor in Correa's absence. Correa will retain his title and his $119,000 annual salary until his term expires in January and Coogan assumes office. 1,002 votes for the embattled Haziel Correa. You know, I people like the guy, you know? They're like, oh, yeah, he's a crook, but he's good for Fall River. Well, you can't have both in that case. You can't have both. You have to pick one or the other. You can, you know, if somebody is a crook, it doesn't matter if they're good for the community because they're going to go to jail and they can't govern from jail and they won't be good for the community at that point. So you're better off cutting ties with the twice indicted mayor. 1,000 votes. I'm surprised, actually. If I'm honest about it, I'm surprised it was that low. I was expecting him to get a much bigger share of the vote than he did. But I don't know. I guess his voters stayed home because they knew he couldn't take office if they voted for him. Move on. Move forward, Fall River. You've still got Lizzie Borden to drive that tourism. And a new day is dawning in January. That should be doing the thing.
No, why? There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Your Boston 5-day forecast. Oh boy. Cold. Get ready. Mostly clear skies tonight. Lows in the city are going to be about 40 degrees. Lows below freezing out in the suburbs, so bring in those tender plants if they're still hanging around outside. Tomorrow, rain in the afternoon, high of about 60. And then we dip below freezing tomorrow night. And that will bring up the possibility of sleet. ice wintry mix in the overnight and early morning hours. So if you're going to be on the road late Thursday, especially if you're heading north and west, or if you're going to be on the road early Friday morning, keep an eye out because there is a potential. We still don't know what the final track of this is going to be, but there is a potential for ice. There is a potential for some snow accumulation. And if you are out on the roads, remember, bridges freeze before the road does. Be extremely careful when it's raining and the temperature is dropping below 32 degrees because those bridges will ice up and become very dangerous. Friday, the bad weather moves out in the morning, but it's going to feel like January. High of about 39 degrees, lows in the 20s. On Friday night, check the battery in your car. Make sure you're ready to go because that first cold day, you know what happens. Everybody's calling AAA. Saturday, mostly sunny, still brisk, high in the low 40s. Lows, once again, around freezing on Saturday night. And then on Sunday, we warm up a bit, high in the mid 50s. Lows in the mid 40s Sunday night. Monday, more of the same, a little bit colder, high of about 50, low around 40. So we're going to be in this. We're going to be in this cold, potentially wintry weather pattern for a while. Maybe until sometime in March or April of 2020. It is here. The winter weather is descending upon us this weekend. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. When we come back, the truth about climate science and climate change, the ugly truth, has finally been revealed. And I'm going to get into that, and I'm going to get into some of the reasons I don't like climate scientists. Also, bad news if you're a Donald Trump fan, because it looks like there was a quid pro quo, which means we got a case for impeachment. We'll tell you what that means and more right after this here on WMFO Medford.
Oh, my God. This is Sarah Beck, consumer meat specialist for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, with a few suggestions on handling frozen meat. If you buy meat that is already frozen, be sure to place it in your freezer as soon as you get home. If you can't go directly home with your purchase, the packages can be wrapped in newspaper, for example, to prevent thawing. While freezer storage is a convenient way to keep meat, be sure you check the recommended storage time for each type of meat and date the packages so you'll know which to use first. If stored too long, meat will begin to lose its flavor, but it will still be wholesome. It's best to thaw meat in the refrigerator. If you don't use the meat once it's thawed, you can safely refreeze it as long as it remains in good condition. For more free information, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
I'm going to the hardware store.
Oh, will you pick up 800 lumen bulbs?
800 more flowers? The neighbors will think we're wacky.
Not flower bulbs, light bulbs.
Come on, Dad. Lumens tell you how bright the bulb is. We can replace our 60-watt bulbs with energy-saving bulbs that give off about 800 lumens.
So, we'll save money.
Right.
Got it. 800 lumens and more savings.
Lumens, the new way to shop for light. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
Midford 91.5 FM. Derek with the bad news. It is the big picture. With you until 9 o'clock tonight. When On the Town with Mikey D, we'll be here with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. 855-915-9636. Remains the telephone number for radio-related emergencies only, because I got to stop everything I'm doing, answer the phone. And you know, and everybody at home sitting there like, where did he go? Why is that person on the phone more important than I am? So, emergencies only. It is November. It is getting cold. Climate change may be the furthest thought from your mind, but it is the first thought on the mind of climate scientists when they wake up every single morning. And I've had a problem with climate science and climate scientists for a while now. And it's not the problem that you would think. Okay. It is not the problem of I think that they're crazy, or I think that some of what's going on out there is being ridiculously overstated for political purposes. But because of the approach, the things that they recommend. One of the reasons I very strongly dislike the Kyoto Climate Accord is because of the way it was treating third world nations. Emerging economies, places in Africa, the Middle East, Asia, South America, where the industrialized nations of the world were basically saying, you can't have what we have. You cannot have industry. You cannot have infrastructure. You cannot have cars and highways or any of those things. You can keep giving us the fuel that we need for them.